Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and I live in Wichita, Kansas. I am a Patreon supporter for Creative Control. I discovered Creative Control some years ago, I think maybe while looking for interviews with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. And I stumbled across this conversation that Vish had with Tommy Stinson that was really insightful. Vish held his own. I think Tommy can be a little bit of a difficult interview at times. And it went really well, and it really got into some areas that I wasn't expecting. And I thought, gosh, I have to listen to more of this guy and his podcast. Yeah, sometimes I'm not necessarily a fan of the music or musicians that Vish will have on the show, but I always appreciate their creative process a little bit more. And more times than not, though, it does lead me to finding a new musical artist that I'm interested in, or to think a little bit differently about maybe some artists whose work I've overlooked. So, you know, go ahead, and if you've been waiting at all to support Vish and Creative Control, now is probably the best time to do it. I know as a public radio employee here in Kansas, listener-supported broadcasting, whether it's podcasts or radio itself, really isn't a thing of the past. It's actually very much a thing of both the present and the future. So, yay Vish, yay Creative Control.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Vicky Mettler is a talented and inventive musician based in her hometown of Montreal, Quebec. Working as Key Avil, Mettler is an explorer of music who blends prepared guitar, vocals, electronics, and other instruments for wholly unique songs and performances steeped in improvisation and structure that have earned her the respect of peers, critics, and loyal fans. Following up on the self-titled EP that Black Bow Records put out in 2018, Key Avil's stunning debut album was released by Constellation Records on March 11th, 2022. It's called Crease and has prompted Key Avil to hit the road, including tour stops in September of 2022 at the Festival de Musique Emergente, the Guelph Jazz Festival, and Pop Montreal, among others, before heading off to Europe in October and November. Vicky and I connected recently to discuss her musical studies and current practice, what it means to prepare an instrument or a voice, and why she was drawn to making such sounds, the kinds of spaces she tends to play in, her sonic and visual collaborators and their roles in her work, how and why she began to incorporate vocals into her music, and singers and lyricists who inspire her, the Guelph Jazz Festival, other future plans, and much more. Part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 712 of Creative Control, featuring the thoughtful and idiosyncratic Kia Veal, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
Just keep on running away, hoping we never meet. It's not the worst thing that's happened to me, but it's not that far off. I exaggerate everything just to entertain my old self.
Hi, Vicky, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Well, I am well. I should forewarn you, a couple neighbors down from me, they're doing some sort of construction.
Okay.
We've been hearing lots of nail guns. It's like roof stuff.
Yeah.
So if you hear shots in the background here, like just like, or any kind of clattering, don't worry. I'm fine. But it's what woke us up today is just them doing something. So just wanted to fill you in on that. Otherwise, I'm well, thank you. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Montreal.
Ah, lovely. How are things going in Montreal for you today? Good. What are your plans? You have plans? You have big plans today?
I don't have big plans. I just have to do gathering footage from a bunch of people.
Well, that
so
sounds
transfers.
It sounds suspicious. What do you mean gathering footage for a bunch of... What does that mean?
Oh, I just had people like take pictures of some shows and videos and stuff, and I'm just trying to get it all together in one place.
Oh, I see. Of yourself. People gather footage of you?
Of the shows, yeah.
Oh, okay. Of your concerts.
Exactly.
Ah, what is the end goal with all of this footage?
There's no precise end goal. It's kind of... it's kind of just to have it if people took it, you know?
Okay.
Maybe doing some kind of promo things or we played at the SAT, the Dome, a few weeks ago in Montreal. So that was kind of something I'd like to do again and kind of a particular event. So just trying to, you know, keep archives or I don't know.
I see. Really no, that's fine. Sorry, did you say you played at a dome? I didn't catch what you said.
Yeah, it's like a dome. It's like it's the SAT, it's called. Mm-hmm. I think there's one in Montreal. There's a few across the world, and they're like surround audio spaces.
Oh,
so there's
okay.
Like 150 speakers, like in a dome shape.
Oh, yes, I've heard there's some sort of electroacoustic thing happening.
Yeah, exactly. Usually it's a lot of visuals and stuff like that.
Right.
So it's,
okay.
Yeah, I guess we just want to see what it looked like, what it sounded like, and I don't know. Just gathering the footage. We'll see. We'll find out what happens.
How did it feel to actually perform in the dome?
It was good. It was good. Yeah. It was a big challenge, but it was fun.
What is your general live configuration? Is it just you?
I used to play a lot of solo, and now I'm playing often with a drummer. So electronic drums and acoustic, like he plays like a snare, like a prepared snare.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just electronic drums, mostly with a bit of acoustic preparation.
Okay.
And then I play guitar, sing, and I have like a few pedals.
Prepared snare is what? You put a wallet on it? Put something in the
yeah. It could be anything, you know.
Anything, right. Okay.
Just like to change the sound, and then he passes it through electronics, filters and, you know, granular pedals, and just to kind of try to replicate the feel of the album without only using samples from the album.
Yeah. Yeah.
So making it a bit more reactive and so yeah, it's really great actually how he brought all this music together. And this is, I'm talking about Sam Gugu. Samuel Gugu is the drummer that I play with.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask that. Do we know them from other projects, or would we know them from other projects?
Yeah, so he has his own project called TDA, and he plays in a bunch of bands. Like I think one of his main bands is Victim, and then he plays drums with other people.
I see.
In a lot of projects, yeah.
I see. Now you have an interest in prepared sounds of all sorts. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's true. I do. I do like to play the guitar that way.
You do, particularly guitar. Is guitar your first instrument?
Yes.
Right. So do you have a sense of where your interest in preparation, not simply... Actually, you know what we should do here, Vicky, because there might be people who don't really understand what to prepare an instrument, what it might mean. I alluded to the fact that with a snare drum, you know, you can put a wallet on it, or you can put something in the actual snare, which is underneath the drum, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do all sorts of things to manipulate the sound. That is, in essence, what preparation means, I think. But can you, just for people listening who may not know, can you explain what it means to prepare an instrument, a guitar, or anything else? Do you mind doing that?
Yeah, I guess for me, I guess it would mean that I take objects, like any objects that you can use to either play the instrument or put it on the instrument to change the sound. So you could like put a, you know, like a chopstick on in the guitar strings, or like a thread, or really anything that, you know, you think could be interesting. Like I play a lot with like a screw, or... You know, just, yeah, using an object to play an instrument in, like, a non-traditional way.
You say you play a screw. This is you dropping screws into vessels and things and capturing the sound. Is that right?
No. Well, I did do that a while ago, but usually for the guitar, I would just play the screw on the string.
Oh.
So, like, as a pick, almost.
Do the strings like that? Do the strings ever look up to you and say... Hey, can't you just use a pick like everyone else? This hurts. Ow. Why play the guitar with a screw?
I guess I'm also really bad at changing my strings, so they have long lives.
Oh, okay.
Of pain.
Yeah.
Really painful lives.
I'm very bad at that too. I'm not a guitar person, but I have guitars, and I will confess to you that I have self-consciousness about whether I'm changing strings properly, if I know what I'm doing. Every guitar is different too, as well, like in terms of how to change the string and all that stuff. So yes, subsequently, many of my guitars that I play every day have very old strings on them. I'm actually the same way with some of my drum heads, now that I think about it. My two tom heads definitely need to be changed. I just want to clarify once again, or at least reestablish that you and I sound similar in that regard. Are we lazy? Why don't we like to change and update our instruments, change strings, change drum heads? What's wrong with us? Vicky, what is wrong with you and me?
There's maybe many things, maybe too many to get into.
Okay, let's just focus in on the lack of desire to change things if they sound relatively okay. Like, when are you supposed to change? If we were guitar nerds, I'm sure they're like, oh, I change my strings every day. What? No, you don't. Come on. How often are you supposed to change strings? Do you know?
I don't know, like, the technical. I guess I would change them if I see that they stop being like, they just become flat, almost like flat wounds a little bit, or like, you know, you lose the ridges.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that takes a while.
Yeah, it does. And I tune them and they tune and they stay in tune. So I'm like, why would I bother changing these strings? But like I say, I think smarter, maybe more intelligent, not more intelligent, whatever. Just more people who know their instruments better, I guess, would be more adamant about. So, and I also think like you change things when you're for drums. Anyway, I learned through experience like, oh, you should really change them maybe before you go into the studio for a session.
Yeah.
That's when you kind of you know, live, it doesn't, you can go through a tour and it's probably fine. But in the studio, you want to change. Does that resonate with you?
I guess it depends how you want it to sound. I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah.
Because then maybe they'll be more out of tune and then you'll be recording and it's, you know, they're losing their tuning. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really have a rule on it.
Is it trusting your, how about this? It's a musical instrument. It creates sound. So do you trust your ears more than your eyes? Because I'll look at my drum heads and think, man, they're really worn out. But to your point, when I'm playing, they sound pretty good. So, and I've talked to more experienced drummers than me over the years. Like I remember talking to my friend Dave Clark, who people might know. He plays in Rio Statics and some other bands. And I said, "How do you know? I don't know what to." People are like, "Tune the drums." Like I'm not exactly sure what I'm listening for. And he explained it. I mean, there's obvious things like ringing and the guitar string goes out of tune. But he told me he told me sometimes he tunes his drums with a guitar tuner. If he likes the way a drum sounds, he'll put a tuner to it, and if it says it's it's a D, he'll write on a marker on the drum head D, and then the next time he's got to change his head, he'll try to find that that note, which I found interesting.
That's cool.
Is that good? I don't know. See, I don't. Dave's smart, and he knows drums, so I trusted him. And I trust him, but I'm sorry. This was not meant to be a music lesson for me. I apologize. I just was curious about your approach. And in some ways, when you get into prepared instruments, the tuning or the precision of the notes is not something you're striving for exactly. Is that right? You're changing. You're trying to alter the normal, conventional timbre and sound, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yes, it's definitely less strict on that.
So in a way, using very old strings in itself could be a form of preparation, if you will.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
It's a different sound.
Yeah, see?
So.
Okay, we got to something. Yeah. So I'm sorry, I cut you off. Did you really explain your view of preparation, or do we get to it? I feel like we did.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Now, what we did, I don't know if we established this. What drew your ear to preparation and these kinds of unconventional approaches to playing music? Do you remember this?
I guess I've always been drawn to a rhythmic approach as opposed to a harmonic or melodic approach in a way. So I think preparation for me was a bit I always imagine percussions or the rhythm is kind of what creates the familiarity, or I don't know exactly what, but it something that repeats and then the preparation acts as the kind of the harmony or some form of melody. So I guess for me that's why it was interesting. It's how can I focus on rhythm and still have something that it's not like chords or anything like that, but it's still, you can still create a form with it.
Do you know where your interest in rhythm sort of comes from? Do you have any recollection of where you, I mean, did you want to be a drummer in any way, or was it simply that you, as a guitar
Not
player,
really.
Wanted to play more rhythmically?
Yeah, I think it was just what came more naturally to me. Like the just harmony on guitar and stuff like that is just, I just always found it, you have to think, I always had to think. And maybe it was less natural for me, that kind of intellectual kind of more like, I'm sure if you do it enough, you don't have to think anymore. But I never got to that point.
Well, I mean, there's not to be too hokey about it, but, we are, as humans, we are a rhythmic based organism. I mean, literally we have a heartbeat and that can dictate our day, the rhythm. Yeah. Sorry, I sound like I'm writing a song by Bette Midler by saying things like the rhythm of our heart. Or maybe that's a different... I feel like that is a song. Isn't that a song? The rhythm of our heart
Probably.
Is beating like a drum. I can't remember who's... Maybe that's Rod Stewart, or maybe I'm making that... Maybe I just wrote a great song. Anyway, we are kind of rhythmic people. I was drawn to the drums and beats first as a kid interested in music. As a player, I should say. Do you remember when you first got into music, maybe as a child, what you were exposed to and by whom and why it spoke to you? Do you have any sense memory of that?
I wasn't really exposed to a lot of music as a child, but I remember actually, I guess for me it was a bit late. I went to school, like CEGEP, for music. And then I really started getting into it actually after I left school. And I guess through improvised music was really when I found like something that I really enjoyed more. And, you know, people started, a good friend of mine started introducing me to music then. And that's kind of how I, that's how, like, as far back as I go usually. When I really felt like I was, you know, attached to it and wanting to just play more and stuff like that. I wasn't really playing that much before. It was kind of, yeah, just really late.
Were you listening to a lot of music?
I'm not exactly sure why I did music. Like, I'm not like, you know, I wasn't really ever, I kind of fell into it, I would say. You know, some people, they play from a young age and everything. And
yeah.
I don't really come from a musical family, and I don't, it's always something I wanted to do, but yeah, it took a while to actually do it.
It's always something you wanted to do, but you don't know why.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a little weird. No offense. I didn't mean to insult you. That was insulting. I'm not saying you're weird, that's like, for some of us, like I've told this story many times, I think on the show in various ways, but you know, I remember my cousins, but mostly my one cousin, Anand, got me into music, and then I was just hooked. I thought he was cool as a cousin, and then when I saw all his tapes, I was like, I want to be like that. I can see my son does this with me a little bit, although I don't think they think I'm cool. Well, maybe they do think I'm cool. I'm being maybe immodest, but you look up to people, and when they're into something, if you like them and think they're interesting people, you try to get interested in what they're interested in. And then you kind of pick and choose in life. Like, you didn't have a figure like that in your life. You're saying you didn't come from a musical family. But did you have a key figure in your life at a young age who made you think that music? No one. Were you born in a pod on an island by yourself? I don't understand. That's fascinating. You don't have any sense of memory. Let me ask you this. You fell into it. What did you go to music school for? What did you study there? Guitar, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Guitar. Okay. And how long were you in that school?
I was there for 3 or 4 years.
And what age did you graduate, if you will?
I was 20, early 20s, 22, I think.
Oh, I see. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you were not a child. You were an adult.
No, I was definitely, that's why it's like even then I was in school, and school is this weird place, but I did make friends with people who, you know, I learned a lot from them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I left school, that's when I really started kind of, you know, just playing a lot of improvised music I met a friend, and we're still really good friends. And then we just started playing together all the time. And like, he's like an encyclopedia of music. So he just constantly was feeding me music and things to listen to. And then we're just playing so much. And that's kind of how it happened. And really with improvised music, because I studied jazz, but I was never good at jazz. I was never like, I wouldn't really practice it that much. And I don't think it was really for me, even though I like jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it, but I couldn't have that kind of like discipline to learn this style. And then I realized like, that's why improvised music is so great for me, because then I didn't have to be, you know, stuck in one thing, as school often teaches you is very narrow sometimes.
So sorry, the schooling curriculum was more about jazz. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, you didn't name this figure who sounds a lot like my cousin Anand for me. Mm-hmm. Was it my cousin Anand? who was this person that helped you?
His name is Raf Wazi. He's a bass player. Also started playing trumpet recently.
Oh, but, okay.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting thing I encounter a lot with guests on my show who play music. They wind up in some sort of schooling or training, whether it's piano lessons as a 7-year-old or like yourself going to a music school later in life, they end up learning some things, but they also end up resisting and rejecting a lot of things. But all of that informs their current and ongoing practice, if you will. Like, you learn as much what you don't want to do as you do what you do want to do. Sounds like that's the case for you. Like, as much as you didn't want to immerse yourself in jazz playing, improvisation is definitely not even a distant, but a very close cousin of jazz. Improvisation, as I understand it, I think as we conventionally understand it. So is it safe to say that your jazz schooling, whether you meant to or not, it had some bearing on your approach to improvising? Is that a fair way of putting it?
I think I would say that, like, what I learned in terms of, like, very basic rhythm and harmony, but even there, I don't see it that way. I don't think anything that I do is related to jazz, really, as much as it's related to rock or to any other style of music. I don't feel that from that. I don't feel like that's what I got from schooling. Like, it was more like a way of listening or just an attention to sound or rhythm, you know, just playing.
Yeah.
Just playing, learning how to play, you know, anything really, just like the basic of music, like reading music a little bit, like kind of like stuff like that.
You feel free of genre on some level.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Are you yourself a pop music fan in any way? Pop meaning not necessarily what's currently on the charts, but just like, you know, structurally, repetitious structure, if you will, which can occur in improvisation, of course, as well. Some sort of anchor or figure. But are you a pop music fan at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I listen to all kinds of music.
Yeah.
Really.
I bring it up because I was playing your brilliant record here, Crease, in the car in the last couple of days, and it's been some months since it was released, and I had it on in the house, and I put it back on over the last couple of days, and my son chimed in, "Oh, this is the person who sounds like Billie Eilish," and I was like, "What?
Huh?
That's interesting." I had a conversation with someone else about people like Billie Eilish and Lorde recently. And they were quite, I think it was Joan Shelley. She's a folk artist from America. And she was just talking about how it seemed like the whole culture had shifted to this rhythm, sort of, let's call it prepared rhythm. Where that's all you heard after a while was just sort of prepared drums, prepared rhythms. Mm. And my son picked up on that on your record. He picked up on the rhythm. All this to say, I think your attention to rhythm is evident even to a soon to be 11-year-old. And I think that's fascinating. Do you start with rhythm in this context as Key of Eel, or how do you begin composing?
Not necessarily. It depends on the song, and you know, sometimes it's lyrics, sometimes it's just a guitar line, and I think the rhythm almost was, you know, figured out as we went along. Like I worked with Zach Scholes on the album, like we produced it together, so I would like write the song, bring it as far as I can, and then we would work on it together. So a lot of the process was learning how to do that, like working together and how the song could be transformed. With a lot of the rhythms, a lot of the beats were done like with synths, and a lot of it was through like a Maximus beat patch that I think Zach like found it and then changed it. So it was a lot of like generated rhythms that we edited. So a lot of editing, and often that would take place almost at the end,
right,
of the song, because you're adding it with all the rest. But not necessarily. Like some songs were not made like that, but some of them were.
Hmm.
So yeah, we definitely worked on the beats together a lot.
It's very hypnotic, if I might say. It's very alluring. Whatever you guys are doing, it sounds great, and it strikes me. So that's sorry. Who is Zach exactly?
Zach is the person that I was working with for the album. He's also a musician, and he recorded also the album.
Oh, okay, okay. And this is all in Montreal?
Yeah.
Are you from Montreal?
Yeah. I'm from Montreal, yeah. I was born on the North Shore.
Okay, cool. So you've been there the whole time. Never wanted to leave. You enjoy Montreal.
Yeah, I do enjoy Montreal. I do leave a lot, but I love coming back here. Let's say that.
Oh, do you spend a lot of time on the road?
We're starting to tour again, and I've traveled a lot. Like I did tour a lot before the pandemic and stuff like that.
So you are a relatively new artist, and for me, I first heard of you via your Constellation Records release. How long have you actually been performing as Kiaville?
I think since 2017, like about 5 years.
I see. Okay. And in that time, you've crossed the globe?
I did. Yeah, I did a bunch, especially during the last years, because I put out an EP in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So then I spent a lot of 2018, 2019 touring, a lot of tours in the States. And I did like one tour in Europe. So I wasn't touring Europe that much. And then the pandemic happened. And then now we're going back to Europe a lot more. So States again. But
were you on the road during the pandemic? Like, or sorry, at the advent of the pandemic, did you... There's a few artists I've spoken to who had to like hightail it home from Europe as the pandemic struck. Were you on the road at the time?
No, I was here. I was actually finishing the album.
I see. Okay. Oh, so most of your pandemic time was spent just finalizing this record?
Actually, we were mixing the album as the pandemic was starting in March.
Oh, okay.
So we were done. We were just mixing it. And then we finished mixing it right as, you know, we went into lockdown.
What is it like to... and then you subsequently have obviously released the record during a period of some measure of stillness or uncertainty. What has that been like for you as a relatively young artist who's trying to establish yourself? What has it been like to try to do so in a period where people feel so unsteady and everything's uncertain and things are being canceled left and right? I can imagine what this must be like for you, but can you articulate that? How has it been?
I guess there is always uncertainty, but I guess you start to expect it, or to, you know, you plan things. Like I always plan things anyways. And then I, you know, if it gets canceled, then it gets canceled. And if something happens, you know, you just kind of live with the flow. It has been harder because of the pandemic, for booking shows, especially.
Yeah.
Just because of it created such a backlog of touring musicians, and that we're still catching up on that. And there's less venues, you know, we lost a lot of venues.
Yeah.
Many things happen that it's not the same world as before, I think. Even for DIY touring and stuff like that, I don't imagine it's easy. And so, yeah, you know, you learn to live with that. And at the same time, like I was always doing like a very DIY touring beforehand. So it was nothing was really certain anyways.
Right. Yeah.
In a way. So you kind of, you know, it's just now it's worse. Yeah. But I guess that's kind of like what being a musician is in a way.
Yeah, it seems to me that the music you're making would probably be more... You mentioned DIY touring, but in my mind, that can mean playing rooms where listening to the artist is actually the point. It's not a bar where the music is part of the reason you're there, but it's just sort of understood that you're going to talk to your friends and go get drinks. Is it fair to say that you would more likely play, let's call them listening rooms, alternate spaces, as opposed to conventional rock bars? I'm sure you've done your share of both, but do you do one more than the other?
I mean, I think it depends where. Like, mm-hmm. I think like when I was touring the States, it was a lot of, you know, houses or, you know, some bars, but the spaces were so different, and sometimes, you know, the sound is not good, so it's like, yeah, it's a listening context, but what are you listening to? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's very like, and sometimes, you know, you play a rock club and the venue has a great sound system, and so it just sounds better.
Yeah, of course.
So I think it's the audience who creates that, And at the same time, I don't know if I prefer playing listening rooms as opposed to non-listening rooms. I think they both have their fun aspects.
Yeah.
Like, it's good to play for people who, you know, might not know this kind of music, or, you know, they didn't necessarily come to see a show, but then maybe they did like it.
Given that
maybe they hated it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, given that you have a record now with songs and you've been writing songs, does a room dictate how a song might unfold for you? Is there still improvisation in these pieces when you're playing live?
There is some improvisation, but it's very structured.
Okay.
So the improvised moments are structured within the pieces. We have started over the past tour to do, we kind of really worked on the set as a set.
Mm-hmm.
So like creating transitions and like, and I feel like that's the first step to actually open up these songs live. It's just like, yeah, it was a lot to learn this, how to play this music live. We had no idea how to do it.
I see.
So I think at this point we can actually do it. We can do it well. Mm. And so we've created the transition. So now it's the set flows much nicer and it opens up between songs spaces to improvise, leading into the next song. And then at some point, hopefully, yeah, we can open up the structure and improvise.
So the audience's behavior is not going to dictate how, let's say, aggressively you attack a song necessarily. It's just whatever. It sounds to me like
it. No, it could.
Yeah. It could. Okay. If someone's bothering you, you're gonna go after them. You know what I'm saying? You just like no, and that sounded mean, but you know what I mean. Like, you, let's say you're in a room and everyone's talking. Would you? You could potentially like, let's amp it up. Let's if they're gonna talk, let's go at them. Do you have that spirit in you at all?
Yeah, you can control a bit how. You know, control the space.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I don't know if I feel like that's like not necessarily, I don't really see that as improvisation in a way, because it's just, it's kind of a reaction, you know?
Yeah.
Like you could be playing like a composition and still do that. So I think, yeah, that definitely, we can definitely do that. And also I turn now with Zach, who worked on the album and who is doing sound live. And so definitely he can also, he knows the music so well, so he really plays with how it sounds in the room, which is great to have that, that he can do that. So we're definitely a team. Like, I see it as a band. We're like a three-piece.
Oh, okay. So Zach's on the road with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you are also a vocalist and a songwriter. Tell me about your approach to singing in this configuration. It is in itself very unique. It is in itself prepared, if you will. Tell me about your vocal approach here and potentially also, you know, how you view, you know, lyricism and songwriting as playing a role in this project. Can you talk about that?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I started singing basically in 2018. So for me, it was really late that I started. When I started wanting to write songs, that's when I started singing. And so I'm still discovering how to sing in a way. And so the process of singing on the album was long. It was a very long process. Basically, we recorded all the vocals at the very end. When all the songs were finished, we went back and redid almost all the vocals. So that, just because they were so different one from the other, and working with Zach, he really pushed me to do things, to like just say he was a really good extra ear to like try things, you know. Since I'm not experienced vocally, and maybe that's it's a big part of the sound, because the vocals are very quiet, but just my like recorded very loud and mixed very loud. So that's definitely, and very a lot of layers, like vocal layers in the album.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, that's partly because I can't really sing loud, like even live. Like I'm working on it, and it's like it's technical, but also it's a nice like intimate space that I think it fit really well with the albums. But it was a process of discovery over about 3 years. And live, yeah, live it's a sometimes is a nightmare, but somehow Zach makes it work, because it's just like feedback and.
Yeah. I imagine having Zach there for your approach to singing. Is essential. if a sound
it can be, yeah.
A sound person who doesn't know your style may not know how to mix it. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So you say you started singing in 2018 after not singing and not really feeling like you could sing. Do you know what compelled you to actually start vocalizing?
I think it's just wanting, I got like really into Jenny Haval and I wanted to write it. Like she was like, I was like, I have to write a song. Like my band had broken up. I had like an instrumental band, an improv band. And then it fell apart and I just wanted to do something on my own. And I wanted to try writing a song. And so I figured I should sing. It would make the song more song-like. So.
Do you have songwriting? You mentioned Jenny Haval as a singer, I think, and potentially as a songwriter. Do you have songwriting influences? I mean, literally like people who use words in a particular way, whether they're prose writers, poets, journalists, or, you know, songwriters. Do you have people you look up to or admire?
I really like Juana Molina. It was a big influence on this songwriting. Fiona Apple, PJ Harvey, always.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always kind of discovering. I was really also into like This Heat, like the Deceit album. Mm-hmm. It was a big songwriting but more like the feel, the vibe and stuff like that. Who else? Yeah, just those are some of the people that I really went into their work.
Right. So in re-recording your vocals for Crease, as you mentioned you did, which I assume you did primarily because you felt like you could do it differently and potentially in your own view better than you had before. Is that what you were kind of intimating?
Yeah, exactly.
Just you didn't feel like it was up to snuff and you wanted to give it another shot, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think it was kind of, that's also, you know, the way we wrote the album, it was one song after the other. So by the time we finished the first song and we got to the last song, it had been probably 2 years. And so we were not working on multiple songs at once. We really worked on one at a time. And so re-recording the vocals brought them together aesthetically.
Yeah. And
I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like your vocal is like a lot of artists these days. I mean, I think vocals are always a texture, obviously, in a song. They're not simply the voice. Like, depending on how it's recorded, what's done to it, the voice can be an instrument, just like another instrument, if you will. I feel like your voice is employed that way in a lot of ways on this record. But I'm also curious about if you have an overarching sense of where what the songs are sort of capturing for you at this moment in time. If I look at the song titles, they're a little enigmatic. I don't know necessarily how they relate to what you're saying, but I'm also so captivated by the sound of your voice that I'm not always homing in on the words, if you will, but I know you spend time on them. Just in that regard, do you think you're giving equal weight to how you're saying things and what you're saying? Or do you feel like you're putting some sort of priority over like how what I'm saying fits with everything else going on sonically? Or is it just as important to you to convey the meaning? Sorry, I mean, maybe this answer is obvious, but I'm just trying to... You're a very unique artist in this regard, I think. Everything is a bit off kilter, but I think very thoughtfully rendered. Like the sound of your voice meshes very well with the sound of the instrumentation. But sorry, can you speak to what I'm getting at in terms of what you're trying to convey and also how you're putting your voice across?
Yeah, so I guess it's it's like the meaning of the songs and stuff. Like the words are definitely chosen. Sometimes they're also improvised, but they're put together in a way that makes sense, but also remains abstract. And I think I like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like the words, they could mean something if you were to read them, but it's not really, I don't think that is really the point. They're very like, imagery based. Mm-hmm. Often, or like trying to describe like a very simple emotion, but like in a way that's more, you know, like creates imagery, really. And sometimes it's just based on rhythm. So I even like, I write out the rhythm of that the melody should be. And then I try to find words. And then by doing that, you know, I go through, like, I always have books of words and phrases.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just go through that and I find, okay, well, this phrase maybe could work. So it's kind of like putting together a puzzle
mm-hmm.
for some of the songs. Some of the other songs, they're just like, you know, they come together really easily. And some of the songs have like three words.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's very, it depends a lot, but I'm not, if I am trying to convey a message, I'm going to let that up to the listener to figure out their own message.
Yeah.
You know,
fair enough.
Because things change too. Like when you write a song 3 years ago, it doesn't mean the same thing now when I sing it. The meaning of a song doesn't stay the same even for the person who wrote it.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. The context of someone's listening experience can change. This is why we often think that a song or an album is prescient, but it's really that, you know, I don't know. It just depends on when you listen to it. It just might mean something totally different. So I appreciate that. For you yourself, though, having released this work into the world and having to process that it's out there, do you pick up on threads that surprise you about yourself? Like things you ended up... Like I appreciate the abstracted nature of your writing, but do you pick up on things that you think, I didn't realize, I didn't even think of what I was saying, and now it's I've scared myself, or I've taught myself something about myself. You know what I mean?
I feel like for me, like if I listen back to the music, like I have no idea how it came together, and I always have this feeling like I'll never write another song.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Oh.
this is it. Like, how did this come together? It's like, I don't know. And it's like, can I do this again? I don't know.
Mm. Okay.
So it does surprise me. I do get so like, just like, so because you do see it differently with time. Like, you start seeing it as a listener, I think, more and more.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. Even yourself, you almost listen to this objectively.
I think with time it could get there, you know.
Yeah.
Because I just forget.
It is kind of odd. As a songwriter, you're kind of doing public journal keeping.
Yeah.
And then you look back on it 5 years, 10 years later, and you're like, what was I even talking about? Like, I don't even know. Is that, that's kind of where your mind's at?
Yeah, for a lot of it. And some of it, you know, of course, some of it you remember more moments, but it's like generally, it's more like, especially for something like that was recorded over such a long period of time, I don't really remember what the order was of the songs, how they came together.
Yeah.
But I think for the next record, I'd like to try to write faster. I think that's
faster.
Just not do it the same way.
Why why faster?
Just to see what can be captured in like one instant, you know, in a shorter period of time instead of like over a period of years. It's like how I think it could create like a different, something different.
I mean, that's ideally, that is going to be your trajectory, right? Always doing a different thing than the previous one.
I guess we'll see.
I guess we'll see. Yeah. In terms of your visual aesthetic, the album cover itself is very alluring. The videos that accompany some of these songs are very visually compelling. Is that all you're doing? Do you have a background in visual art as well?
I don't have a background in visual art, but I work with some amazing people. Like the videos were done. Yeah, it's just like I have like ideas and then I work with people to make them happen.
I see. Okay. Yeah, these are all collaborative. You seem to really, as much as you are your own artist, you seem to collaborate. You've spent a lot of time here shouting out your collaborators. Collaboration is important to you, yes?
It is important to me. And I don't collaborate that much with music.
Hmm.
Like I work with Zach for the recordings and stuff like that. I work with Sam for the live. And then... You know, I had a friend, another friend playing cello and stuff like that, but I feel like for me, the music aspect, I really like, I don't know, for the album, I really had to figure out what my voice was. Mm. And then visually, I collaborate with the visual artists, and I love that. Because I'm not a visual artist, so I...
Yeah.
But definitely the people who I work with, yeah, they have an aesthetic, you know, they do amazing work. So I think it would just like, then we just come together and see what can happen, you know?
Yeah. Is there a visual component to your live show per se? And I don't mean, well, sure. But in any regard, whether it's the way you and your fellow musicians are attired, or is there that kind of approach to your live show? Is like, this has got to be visually stimulating as well as sonically?
I mean, there's no like costume or anything. it's not that I wouldn't want to, but it gets really complex to do that. Yeah. I do it for like video shoot, like live performances. I just filmed one with like, it's like different costume for each song. And like, for the live show itself, I worked with Miriam, who did a lot of the visuals that you might see on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And so those visuals might she did them live for the album launch in Montreal, mm-hmm. and I might start integrating them into the live show when I can, when there is a proper projection set up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that will be there will hopefully be a visual aspect to the show for tours.
Nice.
But yeah, nothing like elaborate like costume and. You know.
No, fair enough. I just wondered. I mean,
unfortunately,
there's a lot of mood setting in your music, and sometimes that can lead people to, you know, bolster the mood with who knows what, projection, lighting.
It would be amazing. I would love it. Like, if I had the budget, it's more a budget thing for me. Like, right. I love like Björk's live shows or like the works of art, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like, the whole thing's like a aesthetic expression. For all the sense, for all the senses, if you will. So I appreciate that.
She's me too. I love it.
So, what is next for you? Are you mentioned that you were mixing and finalizing this record during the pandemic, and I think you said you were mixing it in March of 2020. So it's been some time. Have you been accumulating and writing new material?
I have not written one note of music since then.
Oh,
I haven't written anything. I haven't done any music. And so I'm going to start again, I think in September. I'm going to take August off and then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that, is that because of the stress of living through a pandemic or, and lack of inspiration because of it or anything else?
No, I think I just wanted to do other things. I did like a lot of video work. I did like a bunch of other stuff. And like after the album was done, like I don't have any music left over. It was all used for the album. And so that's kind of, in a way, I had to take a break, I think.
Yeah. No, it's fair. I think we all should have taken longer breaks than some of us did during this very strange time. But you do have some tour dates coming up, yes?
I do have tour dates, yeah. We're supposed to go to, I'm going actually to play in Berlin for next month. I have two dates in Berlin and then Europe in the fall.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. That's great. And are you doing some Ontario shows?
Yeah, I'm doing I'm going to Guelph actually.
Ah, my old stomping grounds of Guelph. Yeah. I miss them so much sometimes, you know. You're going to the Guelph Jazz Festival, as I recall.
That's it. The Guelph Jazz, and then we're playing a show in Northern Quebec.
Oh.
And where else? I think that's it in September.
I hope you can figure out a way to be in Guelph for as much of the jazz festival as possible. I think you'll find, based on what I've seen, the programming looks very great, and it's always, it really is one of the greatest festivals in the world. I don't know. Have you heard tell of it? I assume you haven't been before, or have you?
I don't think I have been before, but I do really like the programming, and the plan is to stay there for every day. Basically, show up on the 15th and leave on the 18th.
Yeah.
I'm also playing in Land of Kush.
Oh, great!
Which is
Sam Shalabi's band.
Exactly. So we're playing the Guelph Jazz too.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of friends and lots of great music, I think.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I'm very happy for you, and I'm happy for Guelph, and I'm jealous of Guelph that they get to see you, because I have you ever come out to, do you think you'll ever come out to Alberta?
Yeah, I mean, I think I played in Calgary.
Oh, for like Sled Island or something, or?
I did do Sled Island, and I did another show with, I think it was organized by Chris Dash.
Oh, yeah, Bug Incision, yeah, Chris, yeah, that's great.
Bug Incision, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I think it must have been 2017 or something.
Oh, sweet, okay.
2018. 2019, yeah.
I wasn't here then, and I'm in Edmonton, but I hope I can see you at some point. I also hope I feel compelled to go to shows by that point too, because I've been a little skittish. But in any case, no, that's lovely. Yeah. So if people want to learn more about your work, Vicky, I assume CSTRecords.com, the Constellation Records site, is one place. Is there anywhere else you'd like to direct people?
I guess I have a website, and I have, well, the Bandcamp too, just and the YouTube. Like, you know, there's a... all the videos and stuff like that, all under the same Kievel name, so it's pretty easy.
I don't normally like asking people about their band names. I think it's personal, and I think often the stories aren't, you know, they're just like, I don't know, I named it this, leave me alone. But that's an interesting, what is the origin of your, may I ask, and I apologize, I've tried to say that to apologize in advance, what is the origin of this name? What does it mean?
I feel like you're not going to like the answer.
Uh-oh. Is it about me? Does this have something to do with me? No. Did I do something wrong?
No. No, because it's I guess like key is like Vicky, the ending of the name, but it's the other Avil is it's kind of what you just said. It's I was brainstorming, like trying to find something that sounds good and doesn't really mean anything. And that's kind of the one that stuck.
It's not a proper word?
I don't think so.
Okay, you made it up.
It might be. It might be in another language. I mean, I couldn't find much. There's like Avila, which is like a very well-known name. And then Avil, I don't know. I couldn't really find anything on it.
Well, let me say this. I applaud this. I think more artists should Google their thought, the band name they had in mind, they should Google it, because everyone picks like weird, like, but we're going to call our band Elevator. And you're like, no one's going to find that. That's not a, just pick, make it up, make up words. Like, yeah. Stand out. I feel like you did that, if I may. That's good. So I just want to say, I will 180 what you said. I liked your answer so much. I liked it more than any other answer I've gotten. Because you made up a thing,
okay, good.
And it works. Because it sounds like...
Yeah, it does work.
I will say, for some of us, knowing where you're from, we're like, oh, it must be French. Oh, was that Italian? You know, you just assume it's another language. So the fact that you made up a word, I think, is bold and wise, if that means anything to you. So well done in that regard. Okay, so we've established where... Oh, sorry, are you on like social... Did you say this already? Are you on social media and stuff? Oh, you mentioned YouTube and your website. Are you on Instagram and those things?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay, well, everyone can find you there, and I'll try to direct people there.
I'm on Instagram too much.
Are you on there too much? Oh, okay, I didn't know that. I'm sorry, I'll take a look at your Instagram. I can't... I try to go on there and then...
I don't post that much.
Okay, all right, I'll take a look. I'm sorry. Okay, if there's a song we can go out on... from Crease, I wonder if you might pick one for us and also tell us why you chose it.
I think I would pick Devil's Sweet Tooth because I just love that song. And you'll hear the cello I was talking about. Like my friend Mark Molnar plays cello, so this is the collaborative song of the album, and it's a weird one. So,
had a lot of references to Satan and Lucifer and the devil on the show lately. I don't know why exactly. Maybe it's just a strangely evil time. I don't know. What does that title connote for you? It's a good one. I like it. But what does Devil's Sweet Tooth mean to you?
I think it's kind of funny. I don't know. I think that's it was kind of funny. funny idea, and it's kind of it's a phrase from the song that I thought was was a good title for it. So
it suggests the devil has a weakness.
Is a sweet tooth a weakness?
It can be. Yeah, it absolutely. I have a sweet tooth. It's not good. Probably not good. Everyone's got to cut. You know what I'll say to everyone else? Enjoy this song. Cut back on the sugar. There's too much sugar in everything, and we're eating it. It's a killer. It's horrible. You don't even think about it. Anyway, that was my rant. This is a lovely song from the new album, Crease, by Key of Eel. This is Devil's Sweet Tooth. Vicky, I hope you enjoyed your time on the show. This was a pleasure for me, and I hope we speak again, and I wish you the best luck in the future.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. It was really fun. And I'll see you soon, for sure, at some point. Sometime, someplace, somewhere.
I know what you're saying. I live in Alberta. It's unlikely, but still, I hope I'll see you soon. Thank you.
Yes. Have a good day. Thank you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you so much once again to Vicky, a.k.a. Kia Veal, for appearing on this, the 712th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about, people have told you about it, and then you subscribe to the show or you follow it and you can't find it because maybe it's too far back and something's wrong with some sort of robot algorithm thing, I don't know. Anyway, if you can't find an episode you've heard about, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control on the Facebook. You can also follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative. Or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. Now, again, you can pledge any amount you want, and you can change it at any point in your life. You can pledge for a year. You can pledge for the month, you know. I mean, I forget how it works, but I think, yeah, if you pledge for a year, say you pledge $100, and that's going to cover you for the year. Well, they'll take it out of your thing there, your money place, and then I'll get it, and that's good. But if you want to change that at some point or delete that, then you can. And if you do it by the month, if you go, I want to donate $6, and then that's good, but then you want to change it to $4, anytime you want, you can do these things. It's not etched in stone. However, $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, including a bonus time sometimes with my guests, old interviews from my archive of things I've done beyond this podcast, and some of those can be very interesting, I think. What else happens? Oh, you get the show early. You get the show ideally about a day earlier than everybody else, but it depends on my production schedule. I'll admit that. But still, you get it early. And that's it. If you want a Creative Control t-shirt, you can message me on there, and I'll get you one while supplies last. Again, patreon.com/creativecontrol for you to support this show. And thank you in advance for even thinking about this. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. As always, thanks to my dear friend Jim Guthrie, who lends me music for this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Kia Veal and checking out her music via Constellation Records and wherever else she has or will put out music. Thanks for subscribing to Creative Control and following it and telling your friends all about this podcast. That's how the word is spread and the show is supported. So thank you for all of those things. I hope you're well and you're staying well, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.